We'll just start with where you are teaching at Hebrew Institute now, half day.
Yes, I'm teaching part-time there from about 1:30 to 5:45, Monday through Thursday, and Sunday from about 9:30 to 12:30. I have to be there when the children are there, you know.
And would you tell us how you managed to work with your children growing up?
Well, originally, my younger son, when my mother took care of him, used to take him down to my parents. But when he was about five, we decided that was it. I couldn't really deliver him to my parents every day, and I had a babysitter, and she lived on our street. And one day she was sound asleep. My husband came home. She didn't answer the phone. The door. He came in, and there was my son with another child from the street, washing off with a can of Ajax. All the paint on my window seat, and they had started on the walls. And my husband woke her up, and she was so sorry. She had a date that night before, and she was tired. But that was the end of the babysitting. And since he was already close to six, I put him in the Hebrew Institute, and he was in my class. But he was an excellent student. He loved it. So for the second grade, I put him in Hillel Academy.
It was easier for him to be in your class than it was for your older son to be in your
class.
Yes,
I really learned from my older son, and I was very careful with Jerome. That he always called me Mrs. Milch in the class. As a matter of fact, very few of the children knew that I was his mother. Really, it was really something.
He was 6 years old.
Yes, he was 6 years old, and he was in my class, and from there I put him in Hillel, which he loved, and then David also went back to Hillel in the fourth grade when he was through. We decided that we wanted him to have a Hebrew education, and although he was a good student, he just sort of rebelled. I think he wanted to make everything tough for us, because I guess in his own little mind he thought we made it tough for him, and I suppose we did. I guess we did. Mm-hmm. And then when he graduated from Hillel, we made our second mistake, and we sent him to the yeshiva in Cleveland. It was an excellent yeshiva, but not for David. It's what happened on a Saturday afternoon, and their free time, my David always was a baseball fan, and Friday afternoon he had gone down to buy a baseball magazine, and that afternoon, and he was lying in his bed relaxing, reading, and his teacher came in, and we saw David reading the magazine. He slapped him in the face, and he said, "Stuss," meaning it's silly to read books like this. You should be studying in a Gemara. Well, that finished that. And the next thing I knew was, on a Sunday morning, I opened the door to go to Sunday school. There's David sitting outside. He slept most of the night on the porch. He had left the yeshiva.
How old was he?
Well, David was 15. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so it was already June. So, in the following year, he went to Alderdice. He finished the last 2 years in Alderdice, but I think that made a mark on him. And that, although he did go, he graduated from Duquesne University in business administration. His attitude is different than my son, than Jerome's. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. And Jerome went to...
Jerome graduated from Hillel in eighth grade, but by that time they had a high school. So he remained for 2 years, and then at the end of the second year he told us he would like to go away to school, but he wants to go to the Yeshiva in New York, which is a part of Yeshiva University. And Jerome was the outstanding student in his class, and Rabbi Teitelbaum, begged me not to take him out. He said he would even put him into the senior, his marks were so good they could put him into the senior year. He skipped the third year, but I remembered my own experience. I said, nothing doing, and even Jerome didn't want to do it. So his last 2 years he spent in New York at the Yeshiva University High School. And when he finished, he applied for various schools, but the school he wanted to go to was MIT. And he was admitted to all the schools that he wanted to, but he decided he'd rather go to MIT. So he went there and received his bachelor's, and all the way through to he got his doctorate from MIT. But the funny thing is that he went to MIT for science, mm-hmm. and he graduated, he got his bachelor's, he got two degrees, one in life sciences and one in political science, and he chose political science for his doctorate, and that's what he teaches now. A combined class of government and political science at Cornell.
What can you tell us about your social life?
Afterwards?
Yes. Well, when you got married,
As an adult?
Yes, as an adult.
I had a very nice social life. My husband is much quieter than I am. I think he sort of felt that he's bitter that he sits back. So I did most of the running around. Of course, we went out. We had friends. We went to parties and so forth. But I was always busy running to meetings. I had all kinds of organizations, you know. But we had a lot of friends, and we belonged to a group. We are charter members of the Young People Synagogue. And when it started some 30 years ago, we started what we called it a social study group. We meet once a month, the first Saturday evening in the month. And we belonged to that group for over 30 years. And everybody must take a turn in delivering a paper, but it must be on some Jewish topic. And we meet in each other's homes, you know, and that has been our way of life for over 30 years with that. And then, of course, we have family affairs, you know, as far as my husband and I are concerned. And we have friends who have parties, and we go out. We used to go very often to the theater. We don't go now. My husband hasn't been well. So we don't go now, and I used to like the symphony. We'd go on Sunday, but my husband wasn't crazy about the symphony, because when they started playing Mahler and all the others, he said, oh, it's a bunch of noise. He didn't like it. So he stopped going. So I can do most of the going out myself now. I'm with friends.
How about family vacations?
We always went. Since my husband was working with the Board of Education, he always had the summer off.
Mm-hmm.
But he did teach driving for many years, so he would in the public school. So we had the month of August off. So that's when we always went as a family. As a matter of fact, we went until my youngest son got married every year. We went to California one trip for 5 weeks through the West. We went to New England several times. We went to Florida several times. Through the Midwest, we did all of our traveling once together, and I used to take a little grill, you know, and one of those ice chests, and we'd picnic out. And our kids, I cannot understand it to this day. I remember we were in the Grand Canyon. I had been there before because I'd been out west before I was married. And we got there, and my husband was so thrilled to see it. And there were my kids sitting in the back of the car reading comic books, you know. And I say, David, Jerome, look. They didn't hear. So we stayed there overnight, and that was it. And yet, you talk to them today, they know everything that happened to the Grand Canyon. They could tell you about the stone. I don't know how they did it, but I think that they enjoyed the family vacations that we had. We went all over this country in Canada.
The fact that you keep a kosher house,
yes.
Did that complicate your traveling?
Yes. That's why we took most of the food ourselves.
You didn't eat too much.
No. The only thing we ate out was lunch. Breakfast I always made, you know. So for lunch, I mean, we ate salads, you know, and my kids were used to it. It didn't make a difference. And many times, they preferred to eat out of the car on a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
I'd buy tuna fish and stuff. Then when we'd go to big towns, I remember in Denver and so forth, I'd buy kosher meat, you know. But we really, they survived very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about hobbies? Can you tell us what hobbies?
I have no, that's my problem now. I can't, there's a reason for it. Everybody has a hobby. They like to embroider, to knit. I hate it. And why? Because I spend so many months in bed with both of my kids that I had to, you know, I had to do something. So I used to knit and crochet. And I remember the first time when David was born, I took the knitting needles and I broke them in half, and I said to my neighbor, Molly Mendelson, Molly, don't ever mention knitting to me again. And I've never touched a knitting needle since. So I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
My hobby is reading.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about the vacations that you took as a family.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned some other interesting vacations that you took when you were a girl. You said you were in New York in the mountains. Were you in the resorts, in the
yes.
Jewish resorts?
Yes. What happened was that two summers in a row, I took courses at Columbia University in Teachers College, and so when it was over, we would go up to the mountains for 2 weeks. Clara, my husband's sister, and a friend of mine who now lives in San Diego, another friend who is gone now, we'd go up to the mountains to Camp Livingston in Livingston Manor, And we had a marvelous time there. We really enjoyed every bit of the vacation there. And I met a young man there, and he used to come to Pittsburgh, and he was sure of, I thought that first we would be married, then I changed my mind. He was a teacher in public in New York, and then I decided, no. So the last time he called me, who came, I said, don't bother, I'm engaged now, and that was it. But we really had a wonderful vacations. One summer, I went to the University of Southern California, and that was the summer, that was 1932, I'll never forget it. The Olympics were going on then, and I went to the Olympics.
How did you get out to California?
By train.
Long time.
Yes, took 3 days. And I met on the train, this was really funny, I met on the train the Irish team going out to the Olympics, and the fellow who won the discus, I forget his name, he became a doctor in Cork, Ireland later on, and we became very friendly. He used to tell me all about Ireland. And one day I said, it was 3 days on the train, I said to him, tell me, do you have much of a Jewish community in Cork? And he looked at me sort of funny. He says, why are you asking? I said, I happen to be Jewish, and I wanted to know. And he didn't know that I was Jewish, and we became very friendly. We wrote to each other several times. But that was one summer.
Who else went with you?
I went myself. Mm-hmm. I had an aunt living out there. And I said I would stay, I told my parents I would stay with her while I was in California. And
you've had some interesting things.
Oh, I've had it wasn't until after we were married, as many years later, that we finally started to go to Israel.
Oh, tell us about that.
Our first trip to Israel was in 1965, but I must tell you that before that, in 1951, David Ben-Gurion came to Pittsburgh for the first bomb drive. And I was the Hebrew secretary, his secretary for the day. And we got to talking, he and his wife and I, and he asked me why I didn't go to Israel on Aliyah. And I told him that I was supposed to go in 1937, but I got married instead in 38 and didn't go. He said, why don't you go now? I said, well, what would I do there? He said, you can get a job teaching English, you're a teacher. And your husband worked for IBM. He said, IBM happens to be opening their office in Tel Aviv this year. So I made we made arrangements to go there on Aliyah. My kids are already 9 and 11. And one day I met an old teacher, a teacher of mine, who later went to Israel himself. And Mr. Bear said to me, what's this I hear about you going? He says, you know, this year they have all that austerity there. Your kids will hate it. They'll never forgive you. And I changed my mind. So we didn't go. When David Ben-Gurion, he got me a job there too, and I had to refuse it. So, but in 1965, my husband and I went on a Hadassah tour, first time, and we loved it. And
two of you went.
Yes, mm-hmm. My kids were already, you know. Yeah. And then he took a sabbatical in 70, I guess, right? No, 68 was the, let's see, the war was in 67, yeah. The following year in 68. He took a sabbatical. We spent a whole year in Israel. He took his graduate courses at the University of Tel Aviv. And I lived with Israelis, and I enjoyed every minute. I mean, I didn't want to live where there was an English-speaking community, because I said I wouldn't get the flavor of it. But what happened was I talked Hebrew and everybody else talked English. They wanted to learn at my expense. We lived in Ramat Gan. In 68, I went for 5 weeks by myself. That was the Torah Masorah tour. It was in 71 that we spent the year. In 68, I went myself.
So you went in 65 with your husband.
With my husband. In 68,
you went by yourself.
For 5 weeks. And in 71, for a year.
You went with your husband for a year.
And we had, I must tell you, we had planned to buy an apartment and live there. But then when I had this other heart attack, when I came back, the doctor wouldn't let me go. But I'm thinking very seriously about going back now. I hope the doctor, Adler, will let me go.
Mm-hmm. Did you take any other trips abroad? Have you been anywhere
no,
else?
No, but in our first tour that we went, we were in Italy, in Rome, and in Florence. And we went to Switzerland, and we were in France, mm-hmm. and in Amsterdam, in Holland.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about the changes you see in the neighborhoods from your early days until now, economic changes or cultural, political changes?
Well, economically, the Jewish people are much more, they're much better off. They're really affluent compared to what they were when I was a child. There were, you know, so many doctors and lawyers, which you didn't have in those days, and engineers for sure, because who got into science then? And we have an organized Jewish community now, which we didn't have then. But in the organization, I find something wrong, because the personal touch, I think, is missing. I felt that when we lived on the hill, and we had all these various the women did this, most of the women, they got together and they got this, started this little Bikur Cholim, and they'd bring medicines and have personal visits. And the Lechem Aniyim, they used to go down every Thursday night and get the bread, the baskets with food. There was something, there was a personal touch and a personal warmth that is missing today. Now, I'm not saying that it's wrong, because when the community is so big now, and it is widespread, you can't maybe be as personal as you used to be. It has to be organized. But in organization, you lose the personal touch and the warmth, the personal warmth. And that's the one thing that I really find wrong with the system. But it has to be. I realize that, but I find that it's wrong. Politically, I think that most of the Jews have remained the same. For some reason or other, they all believe the Democratic Party is the party of the people. I don't have to tell you that. And I must tell you that when Franklin Roosevelt was elected president, my father was so vehemently opposed to him. He kept saying, he would talk in the store, that he is not a friend of the Jewish people. His attitude is not that he will not let the Jewish refugees in. And I remember when Wendell Willkie was running, my father was a Willkie man, and he kept saying Roosevelt was not a friend of the people, he's not a friend of the people, and it turned out to be right, that they did not let the Jews in. And my father was proved right afterwards. But most of the Jews were Democrats, as they are today. It's only the very, very affluent Jews, I think, that are Republicans. The majority of Jews today still believe the Democratic Party is the party of the people.
Mm-hmm. And culturally, do you see?
Culturally, of course, I guess there is somewhat of a change. There weren't too many cultural benefits that the Jewish immigrant people had in the early days. All that they had was an occasional Yiddish show that would come from out of town, and there were little groups meeting in the Aaron Kaufman settlement, but most of their outside time was really taken up with the synagogues. The ladies had a little group, a sisterhood, a this or that. Today you have so many more. You have the Aaron Kaufman Center here provides so much, and of course Anathan House for the senior citizens. I guess I don't go there, but I guess it's marvelous. They really have a much more, a much better developed cultural life here now than they did then.
What about religiously?
Well, religiously, I'm sorry. I mean, there is something missing today. We have a lot of synagogues, but, it's also the time, and I mean, in those days, although there were Jews who were vehemently opposed to religion, we had socialists, and they used to carry on something high. I remember on Yom Kippur in front of the Russian synagogue, they would deliberately stand there and smoke when the Jews were in the synagogue. But most of the Jews in those days were more attached to the Jewish religion than they are today. Today, they go to the synagogue. I mean, after you have a bar mitzvah, you have to be a member of the synagogue, you have a bat mitzvah, but that real attachment is missing in the middle group. Now, I find that the younger Jews are coming back to a greater extent than their parents did for some reason. I guess they're looking on roots. I don't know what it is, but I guess they're looking for something. And I find that those younger ones, their children are now getting the Hebrew education that perhaps they didn't get. And that they are more, I'm sure of it, because I see the kids who are coming. And I know their parents very well, and I see that their parents tell me that they missed it when they grew up. And they missed it because they tell me that their parents worked so hard, they had no time. But I think that it was not that so much. They grew up in a time when the melting pot was the thing. You had to be like everybody else, and you couldn't afford to be stand out as a Jew. Today, we are a very secure people in this country, despite the rise of some anti-Semitism. But we're very secure, we're very influential in various fields, and you don't have to hide your Judaism. And so these people want their children to know, because there's a definite movement towards intermarriage and assimilation, and they don't want it to happen to them.
Do you find much growth in the Orthodox congregations?
You mean in numbers?
Yes.
No, I don't think it has grown, but I think that those who belong to it today mm-hmm. are more attached. I find as I go around that there are more young people now in Orthodox congregations than there used to be. There is one that started here a few years ago. They joined the, what we call the Polish Shul, the Shaar Tzedek. They called themselves the Minyan. All young professors and doctors and lawyers, and they come every Sabbath, every Shabbat, to the synagogue. They have classes. Their wives come, their children come, and there is a tremendous feeling and attachment to the synagogue. And but in numbers, I'm not sure. But in depth of attachment, I believe.
And the synagogue that you helped
the young people's, yes. We have a wonderful group of people come there. They're not so young anymore, because their kids are already going out of town, you know, and so. But we have many doctors and lawyers and engineers and scientists and what have you there who are really committed to traditional Judaism, so much so that we sit separately. We don't have the machitza, which is the glass barrier, but the men sit on one side, the women sit on the other. We have no women speakers. No women are called to the bima for the reading, nothing. Most of the women, we have a couple of women's livers who are fighting now, but most of the women are very satisfied, and I won't say that they're women. They're all women who have a tremendous education, but they say, as I do, that you don't argue about politics and religion. And we're not called to the meme. That does not mean that you're not secure as a woman. It doesn't affect us.
Mm-hmm. Did you belong to any organizations?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about your community involvement.
Well, I was president of Hadar, a chapter of Hadassah, and I have been a study group chairman for over 25 years. I was president of the Western Pennsylvania branch of the Women's Division of the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations for about 4 years. And I was president of the Hillel Academy Women's Club for 3 years. I am now chairman of the Women's Division of Jewish National Fund. This is my third year. And I've gone out on drives, you know, for multiple sclerosis and cancer, but I've never become involved, really, in those any organization that is not Jewish, per se. I've been too busy with everything
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yes, and I was president of the Hebrew Teachers Union, and of the Chug Ivri, which is a Hebrew-speaking club. I was president of that, too.
Yeah. Have you ever been involved in politics to any extent?
No, really I haven't. I can't say I've been interested in politics, but not involved myself in politics, no. Mm-mm.
Well, and then in your professional life, can you tell us anything about any relationship you develop with colleagues that you find interesting or important?
Yes. Well, in the public, when I was in public school, I developed a very great friendship with, I mentioned her name, Ann Bingham. She was a personnel director. She's gone now, too. And we were very friendly, and I used to go to all the meetings with her. You know, I would go to all the meetings. And I had very good friends all through the years, non-Jewish friends who were in my class in the teacher's training school. And when I'd go to visit them, one especially, I remember they were Germans, they lived on the south side. They always had for me special food.
Yeah.
But in Hillel, I was very friendly with the principals, and so much so that we were invited many times when they moved away already to their weddings and their families and so forth. And of course, the Institute, I really grew up in the Hebrew Institute. And Dr. Evans and I, well, actually, his father was a cousin of my mother's. So we were related, but we worked very closely together in Hebrew education all the years.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about your, did you say that you were involved in founding this Young People Synagogue?
Yes, my husband and I are charter members.
When was it? Do you have the history?
It's about 30 years ago. Let me see when it was.
So I don't really know much about it.
No. Yeah, this is 1977. We came back in 45. Yes, it must be about 32 years old. What happened was, we had a young man here. He was vice president of Xerox after Dr. Jack Goldman, came from New York to work at Westinghouse. And Jack was a scientist, and he was a young Israelite in New York. And I suppose what happened with him was that he felt uncomfortable in most of the synagogues because they were run by older people, you know. So they decided to start a group where they would have take part. So there were about 10 of us, 10 group couples, really, that started. Mr. Herman Engelberg and his wife, and Albert Bloom came in about 2 years later, and so forth. And we started this, and we took a room in the old Hebrew Institute, which was on this place right here.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew then, and we take part in all the services done by the members. We have no outsiders. That is, we don't hire anybody. Let me put it that way.
It is still housed in the Hebrew Institute building right across the street.
Every Sabbath in the auditorium.
And the services are conducted by
the members of the synagogue. They do the reading. Dr. Rosenberg, from the Dean of University of Pittsburgh, he reads the Torah very often on Sabbath. It's done all by the members. We did have a cantor that we had hired for the holidays for a few years, but he died several years ago. And since then, we do it all ourselves.
How many families belong, do you say?
See, we have it run differently. If you buy a seat for the high holidays, you're considered a member. Well, on the high holidays, we do have about 300 people there. So it would be 150, but during the year, we have about 100, 125 that come every week. And I would say that there are about 50 active families. Let's put it that way, 50 active.
Now the children get their religious training through the Hebrew Institute then?
Some go to Hillel, some to the yeshiva, some to community day school. We have all shades in there. But they come there, and the children are very active. As they become bar mitzvah, they are asked to take part in the services. And
it's Orthodox?
Yes.
Okay.
I suppose Yeshiva HaChatzim would say we were not Orthodox because we don't have a machitza, you see, but it is an Orthodox.
But the women do not take any part.
Mm-hmm.